This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the W12 podcast. We are on episode 21 of the season. Last five games. Quickly, thank you all for tuning in and listening again. We're just continuing to get mad numbers every week. Listeners, anyone who hasn't caught it, we caught up with Ali Fowling last couple of weeks ago now. So if you haven't given it a listen, give it a listen. He's a bit of a mad boy, isn't he? But really good listen, good feedback. So thanks for listening. This week, we are going to reflect on the last couple of games and look to a massive, massive last five games of the season where I don't think anybody has a clue what's going to happen. But we're going to try and chat through what's going on. So just quickly, today on the call, we've got Duncan still on the call, still on.
Every week. Good times and bad times. So hopefully some good times coming up.
Yes.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. We also welcome back Ollie from Up the Arse. Welcome, Ollie. Mate. Been a while?
Yeah, it has been a while, yeah.
Have you fixed your lights yet in your room? Don't look like that.
I've got a good old ring light system now, so I've upgraded.
Borrowed that from his missus.
Yeah. And we've also got another W12 debut. We've got Sky Sports' very own Aidan McGee. How are you?
Not bad, thanks. Yeah, I left Sky Sports a couple of years ago, though. GB News now.
GB News. Oh, great. How's everything going, mate? You okay?
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you. Yeah, I was in a bad situation last week. I was in intensive care in hospital, but QPR's performance against Preston didn't raise the spirits very much. But I'm well now, and the trip to Hawthorns on Monday, which I managed to catch on TV, lifted my mood no end.
Good. Well, I hope you get better soon, mate. Let's chat through that Preston defeat then. I was really optimistic going into it. I really was. I think I put them in an accumulator, stupidly. But, I mean, I don't know what your boys' view was, but it was very, very dull performance, wasn't it? And the goal was coming well before it came, but it didn't feel like attacking-wise we were doing anything of any magnitude. Aidan, what were your views? Did you get to watch it in the end, or was it just highlights? Or
no, I didn't watch any of it. I listened to. I had a feed from TalkSport into my face mask in the middle of the day. That's the only contact I had. They had a reporter there, so we got updates every 10, 15 minutes or whatever, or maybe a little bit less than that. But I could kind of. Preston are always one of those opponents, particularly Loftus Road. They play well against us. They're one of two or three teams in the Championship who've got very good records at Loftus Road. It wasn't a huge surprise to me. People expecting to roll over a team like Preston. I mean, I think going into the game, there was something like, when they're in joint contention for the playoffs right now. Or they were after that win against us anyway. So this is the difference when you're a Preston, or when you're even a Stoke or one of the teams outside London, you can creep up the table without anybody noticing. And you don't have the pressure and the spotlight that you have even being QPR. QPR are the kind of, from the media point of view, because of where they are in London, attracts a spotlight. It makes the club more difficult to run, more difficult to manage, quite an expectant fan base as well. And what it means is sometimes you can take your opponents a little bit lightly. I'm not saying the team did, but I think some of the supporters were a bit too over-optimistic in expecting us to put Preston to the sword. It's not as simple as that. I've seen them win probably 6 times at QPR in the last 9 years. And so at least we didn't concede an early goal. That's some small comfort, I guess. Not that it was, obviously, that wasn't remedied for very long, given what happened at West Brom. But huge chance missed by Ilyich Cher. It was very worrying that after the second goal, the fans started turning on the players. I mean, that made it 2 wins out of 24. I think the players were on borrowed time in terms of their supporters turning on them anyway. I don't really blame them for that necessarily. It's not like they haven't suffered their fair share of strife in the last few months. So not a huge surprise to me. No, they're tough, rugged opposition. And it didn't feel me with great heart going to West Brom, I must say.
No. And that Ilyich Cher miss, I don't know why, but as soon as from that moment onwards, I don't know if it felt when I was watching it, you felt the stadium, the players, especially with the first goal as well. Everyone, as soon as that first goal went in, you could see it in the players. They were completely deflated. And when the second goal went in, there was absolutely complete. Obviously, West Brom, we had more time, but there was a completely different attitude from going 2-0 down in the 2 games. Doug, what was your view of the Preston?
It was really, I was disappointed because when the team came out, I was thinking, hello, this is like our strongest lineup in absolute months. I was thinking quite positively. I thought like if we were going to get a result, this would be the day that our season kind of reignites and we push away from the relegation zone. And it just didn't happen. And like you said, the Cher miss was massive in a sense. If he'd been fully match sharp, he would have taken that and he would have scored it. But it's just one of those where, like you said, the heads just dropped after the first goal. And then the second goal went in, it just was a absolute shambles. But for me, it was just, with the second goal especially, like, I want to give like a little bit of a, not like a shout out, but like praise Jimmy Dunn for actually tracking back. None of the other defenders made any effort to try and get back. At least he did, like taking like a shred of light out of a crappy situation.
You know what annoyed me a little bit, and this goes to QPR's recruitment for years, never mind this summer or in January or last summer, but that Tom Cannon, right, he's smashing in the goals, right? I think he's in 6 and 8. He's got like 20 in the under-21s in the last 30 games for Everton. That's the type of loan or the player that we should be bringing. I can't imagine the cost was much. But I keep frequently seeing these clubs in a similar, you know, stature and maybe finances to us find these gems, you know, these loans. I'm not Chris Martin's biggest fan, but, and it's not his fault, but that, you know, they brought him in January. Could we have not brought him in? Because he's the kind of striker that we're desperately missing. That on the edge striker that can, you know, to find the gaps and through balls, add a bit of pace. Ollie, I don't know what you think.
Yeah, I mean, before going to Preston, the loan situation, I think the problem is in January, we needed someone that has scored goals in the Championship before. Someone like that is the type of risk that we just could not afford to make, because if he's not going to score goals, then, you know, we've had the option to bring in like Jamal Lowe, who's been in that situation before. If we'd not brought him in, would it have made a difference now? No, but I suppose from their point of view, you bring in a young player that's a risk. I can understand why it wasn't brought in, but that's the type of player that you want to bring in the summer, really, on loan, just so you have the option to, you know, if you can make the changes that you need to make mid-season if you need to. But yeah, I mean, Preston, again, I think in the scenario QPR at the moment, you cannot be missing huge chances like Cher did. I'm not blaming Cher, you know, he's been, the whole team's been off this season, but I think the way QPR are at the moment, you can't miss a big chance like that. If you do, you'll likely lose the game. You know, we had 10 shots, 1 on target. And, you know, the second that goal, that first goal went in, you knew it was game over. You know, the players, you could see it in their faces. The body language was horrific, to be fair. But I just think that was the first time in ages where I thought, you know what, I think we might actually be getting relegated here, because I could not see the next point coming from any of them. You know, I do think our fans, as Aidan said, underestimated Preston. You know, two wins, two losses in the last 10 games, and those were to Burnley and Borough. So I think they're a good side. So I'm not surprised we did lose to them, but what a chance that was for Chair to put us ahead. Could have been different if he'd scored it.
Yeah. So, I mean, looking at Monday at West Brom, Aiden, obviously battling draw. I kind of feel, I mean, look, it's a great draw coming back from 2-0 down, but we really need some wins, don't we? What was your view on that? Did you manage to watch what you said?
Yeah, I did watch it, and honestly, the first 13 minutes or so is almost like the apocalypse. It's, you know, I hadn't seen the game on Friday. I'd seen the game at Wigan, where obviously we conceded early on, and, you know, we didn't really trouble them after that. And then this one was different. It's almost like it was the easiest scouting report in history for the West Brom backroom team. They just lob balls in our box and you'll score. And because there were a couple we got away with as well in those first 13 minutes, as I recall. But then I did like the way. And you have to remember how difficult this is to do, just to, on a flick of a switch, find confidence. And to be fair to the players, after the 13th minute, it helped that we got a goal fairly soon after. But we had a lot of possession in that game. It's almost like the players took the responsibility themselves to play the way that they know. There's an obvious difference in terms of the tactics since Gareth Ainsworth took over. We are a little bit more direct. I think that's a little bit foolhardy when, you know, we don't really... I mean, we played two up front this time, but if you look at our players at their best when they've got possession, we're a possession team. You hardly ever get teams coming to QPR and dominating the ball. In fact, we can go often when we've been away over the last 3 or 4 years, we often dominate the ball, even if we don't win. So, but in terms of actually showing a bit of fight, showing a bit of determination to not let this game go the same way as the previous, however many in the last 24, I didn't think West Brom were particularly good. I thought they were complacent after they went 2-0 up. But hearing the manager afterwards, I was encouraged. I have to say, I felt as you know, better than I have done certainly since the Watford game, and for a long time before that as well, about our prospects. But it only matters if we can back it up against Coventry. If we can go into that game and make it 4 points out of two, we beat Coventry. I think that, you know, the omens are good for us staying up.
Yeah. I've got to say though, what that first goal with Seni, like, I mean, I don't know. The old Seni from a year or two ago now seemed, I don't know if he's well and truly gone, but it feels like he's well and truly gone. I don't know exactly. It's harsh to say his attitude, isn't it? I think we've mentioned a few of the pods before. I just don't get that, like, fighting from him. You know, the I don't know what it is. And it could just be his chilled, calm persona that he's got that maybe he doesn't. But he's making so many mistakes. And look, he's not a bad keeper, but I'm just wondering if he's...
He needs the season to end.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if he's...
Well,
absolutely, but it's not. And we need some points. So it's just frustrating, isn't it, that someone who we know historically has been such a good keeper... I don't know whether it's what he signed up for, if you know what I mean. In relation to him, maybe possibly staying, or I don't know. Anyone got any views on Seni?
Do you think that because of the situation we've been in recently, with no form, no points, that he couldn't have been dropped either? There's no like direct competition as such for like anyone that's putting a lot of pressure on him to lose his spot. I don't feel like Archer's got the trust of any of the managers really, apart from when Seni's out injured.
Archer's not bad. He's a, you know, proved at Millwall he's a competent goalkeeper. He didn't fall out with their fans there over his playing, over what he did on the pitch. It was other issues. But it's such a big decision, dropping your goalkeeper. It's not like dropping any other position on the pitch, because it has implications for everywhere. And it's what we think as fans. When we drop the goalkeeper, we as fans think it's bigger than dropping someone in the wide areas or someone up front even. And so you've got to accept that your goalkeeper's made mistakes. They're going to have bad spells. And for all the hassle it was worth, given everything else that was going on at the club, or is going on at the club, I don't think it was another fire that Ainsworth wanted to start.
No. I think that's the thing. I remember one of the Burnley games, and their keeper made a mistake, came for a ball, and they scored. And Kompany took him off at half-time. Like, I just feel like we aren't in the situation where we could risk losing any more points by bringing another keeper in and like putting Senny on the bench for a game just to kind of clear his head or refocus his head.
Yeah, but I mean, we can't now, but he's been making mistakes for weeks. I mean, I could probably name four or five mistakes that he's done.
When our defence is struggling, you don't want to then bring in another keeper. And do you know what I mean? Like, it's just, I don't feel like we've been in a situation where we could have rotated him or rested him and given him a chance to clear his head and refocus.
It doesn't help that the centre-backs in front of him have not... Dickie's had no form this season, especially not since Christmas. Dunn has been suffering by association, I think, as well. I think, you know, it was a wise move in the end, moving him to right-back.
Communication is massive, though, isn't it? I think, I don't know if you saw the interview with Balogun that the fans did. He mentioned communication being a massive issue at the back. And when you're at the ground and you're listening, you can't hear anything. You can't hear anybody saying anything, really, especially at the back. You know, when you look at corners and free kicks, there's no one talking, you'd expect to see. So, yeah, I can understand that. I thought it was good to see Luke Amos deliver a fairly decent performance. He wasn't outstanding, but he was certainly much better than he was at Birmingham when he got hauled off, you know, and he looked really down. So it was a bit... Seeing him on the starting lineup was a bit, is he going to be all right? But I actually thought he did okay. Thought he grew into the game as well, like a lot of the players did.
This time last year, he was only player to emerge with any credit over the last sort of 15 games of last season.
He was a Warburton man, wasn't he? That's what I think. I think he was a Warburton.
Yes, he was. Around him. He was, and I've never had a problem with his contribution on the pitch. It's just keeping the guy fit, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. He was good. He gave us some legs in midfield that Janssen hasn't been giving us recently.
No. I like Amos. I think he's got a lot of different aspects of his game. You know, we saw last season he popped up with a few goals here and there. Season before, can't think when it was. I think his injuries have plagued him, and I think that's why a lot of people were worried about him being on the pitch, because, you know, the same way that when someone's been injured for a while, a lot of people don't think he's ready. But I think Amos was arguably the best player on the pitch the other day. And I think, you know, if he can keep playing like that, there's no reason why he can't push on and help us. But, you know, he can defend, he can score goals, he can create chances. I like Amos a lot, and I know he's got his plaudits, but I'm very much a fan of him. Yeah.
I thought Sam Field had a great game, which I think helped him. I thought Sam Field, I don't know if it was West Brom and he sort of upped it. It was the old Sam Field from the start of the season I saw on Monday, which I think helped Amos a bit in relation to he was covering a lot more ground. And I think Luke just goes sometimes when he did that too, he just goes missing sometimes, or he just gets ball watching and you'll see him like on the wing and you're like, what are you doing out there? So I think that helped. I thought Dykes had a good game as well, but yeah,
it's important to remember as well, West Brom haven't lost at home since October, so although they've had problems off the pitch and, you know, different problems to ours, but there's been some real turmoil there. You know, that's still, there has to be a good point, especially in context of what we've done ourselves. We've got to look at ourselves first and foremost, but a point there is something to build on. And, you know, we'll be looking ahead to Coventry in a minute, but we have to back it up.
I watched it on a stream. It was Baggy's TV stream. And
you love a Dodgy stream, don't you?
Oh, I love them, mate. Easy that way. No, and they were saying that, you know, QPR have been... You know, I think it was probably about when it was 2-2, they were saying that, like, we don't deserve to be even getting a point here. QPR have been solid. There's no way they're not going to stay up. You know, they liked us. They couldn't understand why our bench had Willock on. You know, they're saying this type of player that would really do well against us, which was, you know, it's hard not to agree with, but at the same time, he's not been great. But I thought we saw shades of him against Preston to an extent. I thought the performance was decent. So, yeah, I mean, Baggy's TV were very much complimentary of us, so hopefully that can push us on a bit.
It's funny football, isn't it? Like, that Richards header at the end, I thought it was in, but had that got in, I mean, you know, you'd be 5 points now, you know, fairly comfortable with sort of five games to go, but now we're sweating. We're so close as well. I was just saying about Lyndon Dykes. I thought he had a really good game. We're going to need him, aren't we, in these last five games to really score a couple of goals, at least two or three goals. But it was good. We needed him to get on the score sheet, didn't we? And sorry, just in your point on Willock and Len, I wanted to talk about that. and what your reasons why you thought they would, why they were dropped?
I don't think that the tactics that Ainsworth is employing right now, being direct with the flick on, with the flick on from Dykes, I don't think maybe there was some hope that Willock might be somebody with enough pace to latch onto that. There's been talk in the past that he might end up more central anyway.
Yeah.
A bit like Trevor Sinclair when he came to QPR, he started off as a winger and they thought he might eventually go down through the middle all those years ago. It didn't happen for him in the end. He tended to stay out wide and went further back in the team, further back towards defence, didn't he, towards the end of his career. But with Willock, I just don't think, if you're going to play direct, I just don't think it works. I don't think it works for him. It just about works for Chair. But if you're, that's what I mean. For me, if you've got these players back at your disposal, you've got to play. You've got to use a plan that reflects their ability. And, Willock wasn't part of the failure. A lot of that period since after the World Cup, he wasn't part of it. And in theory, he should be, he was dropped. I mean, he was dropped for the Luton game inexplicably by Critchley. And I think this time, if he wants to move in the summer, which inevitably he will do, it was in his interest to get on and play well. But I don't think the plans laid out by Ainsworth really suited him. And that would explain why he's dropped. And I don't see him being restored on Saturday either, because I think that it's very, very difficult. Once you finally hit on something that looks like a formula, it's going to be very difficult for him for Ainsworth to change that.
I mean, he played Jimmy Dunn right back. I didn't notice that massively in the game. I don't know if it was just me or if anybody else did notice it, but I don't know if you saw him come out this morning and said in his one of his media conversations that Jimmy Dunn had a really good game at right back. But yeah. I don't know if anyone else. I think he played a Doma sort of there, but further, not too sure. But he did something on that right that was slightly different to what he did on the left. Too sure why that was.
I think he had to break up those two.
Yeah.
Because, we forget that, Dickie's had no form. Probably since last season, actually.
Yeah.
And Dunn's still a young player. And if there's a weakness at the middle of the central defence and you think you better go back to a back four, then put Balogun alongside Dickie. And, we looked a bit more solid, I thought.
Yeah, I think Balogun definitely gives us that. I think we need him for the last five games for sure. We see so many set pieces, don't we? I'm kind of thinking that we're all right in open play, but we're not, are we really, either? But
if you've got fullbacks, and at the moment the fullbacks aren't being required to bomb on the way they were perhaps earlier in the season, and because that would leave Jimmy Dunn exposed, really. So I'm not sure he's got that in his game. But if you just ask him to defend that flank, then I think that's something he can do. He didn't look out of his depth the other day. I didn't see a lot of menace coming from that side in that side of the pitch in open play. It worked from what point I could see. It worked quite well.
Yeah. Yeah. I just sometimes Dykes and I don't know what else is Dykes and Martin together up front.
It's a bit pedestrian, isn't it?
It's a bit. And I know they both scored at the weekend, at the last game. So, I get it. But I still look at the team sheet when I see them together and just think, I don't know, do we stretch teams enough, especially at home with them too? But then, who have we got to come in? Maybe Lowe, he's not done great, has he? Willock's not done great. So, difficult, isn't it? What other options? Sinclair's not fit, which is frustrating because you'd like to give him a go. Doug, any views on the striker situation we've got?
Okay, it's difficult, isn't it? Because I think Martin brings in that experience head that I think Dykes needs alongside him sometimes. Like, Dyke, when he was up with Charlie Austin, like they made a really good partnership and it really worked for us. And I feel like it suits him. But like you said, it's a bit pedestrian and I don't know. Like, I feel like we're a bit one-dimensional when we have both of them in the team.
I think if you've got like also physical centre-backs, like Birmingham were like centre-backs spot on, like there's no way you were out-muscling them. It kind of, all of our arrows are kind of nullified. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Dykes is okay. He can get in behind Nish, but once he gets the ball, everyone's caught up. Everyone's back in position. You know, it's not like he can continue and beat defenders to get a shot off. So, but like you said, Adil, I can't see him changing the team for Coventry. I don't know.
I don't see that. I mean, are we looking ahead to Coventry now?
Yeah, why not?
I mean, you know, they're ninth in the league. I think they're within about 3 points of the playoffs. So the idea they're going to come along and just sort of, you know, roll over for us is pie in the sky, quite frankly. They're a really good, accomplished team. They lost Casey Palmer, Callum O'Hare around about halfway through the season. They still managed to keep in touch, largely because the lad, Jokeres, has been for the Swedish striker, has been playing well up front. They've got Matt Godden, who he played 200 games in non-league before joining Coventry. He's 31 years old. I mean, you talk about gems that you can find. He came up the leagues with them. I mean, it's an extraordinary story, and he's still got a goal threat in him. I think they'll probably be, my friend's a Coventry fan. He's going to the game Saturday. He thinks that they'll probably be 6 points off the playoffs by the time it comes to the end of the season. But they're enjoying the ride. They travel in fantastic numbers because they don't attend, you know, there's a little bit of a boycott for the home games, has been in recent years. And it's almost like playing Newcastle in the Championship when Coventry comes to your stadium. They always, I mean, it's not that far away anyway, isn't it, from West London if you live up there on the M40. But it's going to be a really, really, really tough game. Really tough game. And that they're an accomplished Championship side. There are no easy games in the Championship anyway. It's a horrible cliche, but they really are.
You say that though, but I saw it somewhere. Some of the runs that some teams have been on this season, there's been some mad runs. Their teams have not won for like 12, 13, 14, 15 games, which is crazy.
Yeah, they are. That's right. I mean, you can make that accusation against us. I mean, how are we still outside the bottom three with the run of form that we've had? But Coventry have lost one game in 12.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I always feel like with these teams, Norwich on you know, midweek as well, I always feel like Preston as well. If they come to Loughrigg and they're at it, we're in trouble. But
yeah,
they could quite easily come to Loughrigg, you know, and if then they can be got at. But I just feel like it depends what Coventry turns up. Essentially how it starts, the first 10, 15 minutes.
I don't think they lost. They did lose, what, 3 weeks ago, lost 4-0 at home to Stoke.
Yeah.
So, and then, you know, they've had some excellent results as well. But that's the nature of the division. You know what I mean? I don't think too many people would have had QPR getting a point at West Brom after 13 minutes the other day. But that's why we enjoy these leagues. I think this is the Championship is probably the fourth best league in Europe.
Yeah. Ollie, what's your view, mate, Coventry? What are you thinking? You fucked this dude yet?
I don't know. Again, do you know what is? I think with Coventry, it's a tough one because they've looked really good at times this season and they've looked poor. But no matter what, they've got Jokeres, and, you know, we're going to have to double mark him because he is their threat. I mean, he has got it all, really, isn't he? I think, you know, if there's one player that you've got to keep an eye on in that game, it's him. Do I think we'll get a good result? I don't know what it is, but after that West Brom result, the comeback, I think we've got a bit of fire in our belly again. Is it going to be enough? I don't know, but I would happily take a point. I think a point at this stage of the season where we are could be vital. But if we get all 3 points against Coventry, that's, for me, I think we'll stay up. But it's going to be a really, really hard game, and we're going to struggle against a striker of that quality. Yeah,
he killed us in the reverse fixture, didn't he?
Yeah,
I remember.
Might as
well feel
last game, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was, wasn't it? He absolutely, yeah. It worries me, Dickie and Dunn versus maybe Leo Balogun can physically match him. But pace wise, I'm not sure either of them can.
Yeah,
I know. I mean, but you look at Coventry. I mean, they're on course. My mate was saying to me today, they're on course to. Mark Robbins is on course to improve their league position for the sixth year in a row. I mean, given everything that's happened to that club off the pitch in that time, that's a hell of an achievement. And again, QPR fans need to be aware of what they're going to be up against on Saturday. It's not as simple as saying, right, we've got a point at West Brom, so yeah, Coventry at home, lads, let's get the job done. It's not, you know, it's going to be a really, really hard game.
Yeah, but we've got to be up for it, haven't we? That's the thing.
Of course, we've got,
you know, Ainsworth, I want to talk about Ainsworth. I don't know what, Dunk, what your views have been recently of what he's been saying and doing and stuff like that. I get it. I know what he's trying to do. But he does make some outrageous comments, doesn't he? That I always feel that are going to come back. Like the cavalry comment, I thought was a dangerous comment to make. He said some things in his last press conference. He doesn't look fazed, does he? He doesn't look worried. Doesn't sound like he's worried. He feels like he's confident, doesn't he? He says things that I think, oh, are you sure? Are you thinking the same? Or would you like that? Are you happy? Do you think that's what he needs to do?
I think he's trying to do that so that he, because I don't feel like he thinks he can come in and have a go at this group of players with how the form's been recently. Like they're at rock bottom anyway. If he comes in and slates anybody, I feel like their heads are just going to go completely even more than they are, and he risks losing the dressing room. Like I think that's how the state of our like squad at the minute. It's that fragile. So he's got to try and be positive all the time and try and put a positive spin on it. Like you said, some of the stuff he's come out with, I'm a bit like, okay, yeah, not sure I agree with that, but okay. Some of the stuff about like when he said we haven't been dominated by anybody, I felt that it was a bit of a strange comment considering we hadn't picked up any points and we've been like turned over by Blackpool 6-1 and stuff. So I don't know, the jury's still out with me for Ainsworth. I've still had my reservations about his appointment as a manager, obviously take nothing away from as a player, but I still have reservations if he was the right man at the right time. It's just a tricky one, isn't it, for him? He's got to build on the West Brom performance, though.
You know, West Brom, when at the end, he was the one who went first, didn't he, over to the fans, and he sort of dragged the players over a little bit. That's what it felt like to me. Like, come on, like, clapping them. Come on, like... I don't know. What my dad always says to me is he's very me, me, me. And I don't know whether that's a thing that he consciously is doing to try and take it off the players, which may well be, but that's the kind of impression I'm getting, Aidan. I don't know what are your views on Ainsworth, because we haven't...
Well, I've noticed a difference in the style of play. If you want, listen, I'm a long ball fan. I like direct football. I like aggressive football. I like being on the front foot. If you want to play like that, that's fine. But it needs to be, you need to have the players at your disposal. And who knows, it might be that he rebuilds next season, irrespective of what division we're in, using that method of football. I mean, it was very successful for him as a player early in his career when he was at Wimbledon. And he was at Port Vale, obviously, before that. And latterly, even at QPR at times under Holloway. So there's nothing wrong with that. But I just think the best managers are the ones who show tactical flexibility. You know, I know it sounds like a horrible modern-day Ted Lasso type comment, but you know, if you look at your player, I mean, someone like this chair is never going to thrive under.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Under a system that requires, you know, or that allows a direct style of play, I don't think Willock is probably going to do that either, especially if he's going to be playing as a number 10. You don't need two number 10s in a long ball system. And you look at Senny's clearances, for example. I mean, it always used to be short. It used to be frustrating under Warburton sometimes when they used to overplay and get caught out. You see it all the time in the Premier League. You see players get caught out in their own penalty area now, which you never used to see up until about 5 years ago. But as a character, no doubts about him at all. He's wanted the job for a long, long time. His problem was that whenever he was linked with it before, he went on a run of 3 or 4 games as Wickham manager where he was losing. So he's very unfortunate. So I don't doubt that he's committed and he wants things to change. Even the hacker thing, I mean, you know, when you go into a dressing room and it's completely flat, There are only certain tricks you can pull as a manager, you know, or as a person, as a human being. And it was just something to distract their the mediocrity that was playing out on the pitch. It was worse than mediocrity because they kept losing games. But equally, if you're going to do that, you've got to be sure that you're going to get reaction on the pitch. And I'm not sure that the players were in the right mindset for that, because it ended up being an object of ridicule for a reason for other clubs to ridicule us, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we spoke about this last time. It's only because we lost 6-1. We did it 3 weeks before, and it was on social media 3 weeks before, and no one said a word about it.
No, I know, yeah.
6-1, it got brought out, and I've got no issue with it, but I'd maybe keep it in-house more, and there's no need for it to come out. I don't think. But Ollie, what anything on Ainsworth to add, mate?
Yeah, I mean, again, when I heard the links, I was quite annoyed. You know, there's some names that I think would have, at the time, I thought would have been a bit better for us. But
who would you have had, Ollie?
It's a tough one. Who would I have had? I would have had the. I can't remember his name. The geezer from. It was a foreign league. There's a geezer link from a foreign league. Can't remember his name, but I would have. But then again, it's a risk, but. Once we had him, I was happy with it in the end. I think that in terms of body language, I think he's the right boat to get in. Obviously, it hasn't played out that way as such, but you know, I think he deserves a lot of credit for leaving the job that he's doing at Wickham after over a decade to coming into the mess that QPR is in. You know, I think we've given him a three-year deal. I think that's a strange one, but I don't think he would have come for anything less.
The thing with 3-year deals, 4-year deals, 5-year deals, there's usually a break clause in it. It's not, you know, Alan Pardew had an 8 for 10-year deal at Newcastle, but I know for a fact it was a 1-year deal, you know, because they had a break clause. So it's not going to, I don't think you'll penalize if we end up getting rid of him 8 games into next season. I don't think it'll be as financially punitive to QPR as first thought.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think. Somewhat of the appointment was almost like a just in case. If we did go down, he's got a lot of experience in League One.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think we've seen him get a couple of results, you know, Watford and West Brom. I don't think any manager would have come in and got much more out of him.
I'm not saying Neil Warnock was the answer, but it's hindsight, right? Because what he's doing at Huddersfield, right? It's great to say that, but I think the only other alternative, sensible one, would have been someone on a short-term deal to the end of the year, someone like a Neil Warnock.
Oh, I'd have taken Neil Warnock all day, straight away.
To get us organised, get us over the line, because he would have done that. I've got no doubt that he would have done that.
I've spoken to Warnock a few times since he got rejected the second time for the job, and it still irritates him, it hurts him, like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, we had him on the pod and he said the same thing. Around, you know, Jimmy Floyd, Hasselbank and all that sort of stuff. But I think... I would definitely, it felt to me, I talked to him, that he had unfinished business as well. And I know that Critchley was still in charge when he went to Huddersfield, but we could have got rid of Critchley earlier, definitely.
Yeah,
that was on the cards. You know, we were just waiting for nothing, really, like something that wasn't ever going to happen. So, I mean, that would have been my only, you know, someone like Neil Warnock coming, end of the season, refreshed, maybe looked at Gareth Ainsworth then, I don't know. But anyway, Dunk, what do you reckon, mate?
He was bound to get it at some point. He's destined to get it. And has he earned a championship job? I'd say he probably has. He's done well with Wickham. Was it the right appointment? No. I think, to be honest, before we got Critchley, I was asking for Warnock. I'd have taken Warnock. I think if we had have got Warnock now, we'd probably be 6-7 points away from where we are now. But, you know, I'm not going to write him off. I think he needs a summer to have a little bit of a go. And, you know, people talk about likes of Willock and Chair and all these players not being for him, but then, you know, he was questioned about that and he brought up the likes of Mehmeti?
He looks quality, would have loved him.
Yeah, you know, he done really well with him. He had him scoring goals, creating chance in League One. You know, if he can bring in someone like that and do a job in Championship, it could work really well. I want to give him a bit of time. I don't want him to leave and as long as we stay up, that is. If we stay up, keep him for a bit. Just see how it goes. Give him a summer.
Doug, is there a scenario where Ainsworth isn't in charge next season, in your eyes?
I mean, like Ollie said, I feel like he was almost put in as a, if worst case scenario is and we go down, he has experience in League One. Like, he's got out of League One with Wickham. He knows that division like the back of his hand. So it was almost like a contingency plan that if the worst happens and we went down, we've got a manager who knows that league. Best case scenario, he keeps us up and he has something to build on next year. But Aidan said, like, tactically, I want to see tactically, if he's got a fully fit squad, a pre-season, will he change it? Will he utilize the players we've got and the like the technical ability they've got, or is he going to rip up the squad and bring in players that suit his like style we know he has at the minute and the direct football?
He knows they're going, doesn't he?
I think he's alluded to the fact that he wants more fighters and wants people to dig in, which he said that he has not in as many words, but I think he knows that he'd want someone who gives everything on the pitch and leave everything. And that you might lose a bit of quality when you get that kind of type of people with that type of squad. You lose that extra quality that we've got. But I think we've got the quality, just really don't have any of the fight. One player I wanted to mention that I think we really miss, and I hope he's back soon, is Tim.
He's played well under Angels.
I really think we miss him. And he can give us something different, whether that's off the bench or... So I don't know how bad his injury is. Again, I get really annoyed with the fact that injuries are always... We have never really known what's going on with injuries. He keeps it close to his chest, doesn't he, Ainsworth? But yeah, I feel like we really miss him.
Yeah, the recruitment last summer, I mean, I'm sure you've mentioned it on previous episodes, yeah. But I mean, if you're I don't want to sound like Captain Hindsight because I wasn't saying this last autumn when we were winning games, but when you're signing 5, 6, 7 players and they've got, and you've already got one or two in the squad who don't have the best injury records anyway, like Amos that we mentioned, in a World Cup year, when in 1 year out of 100, you've got a World Cup in the middle of the season and you know that fixtures in, and the Championship's already 46 games. I mean, I don't... Nowhere outside the EFL plays that many games in a season. And you know, QPR are one of those teams as well. We in the last couple of years we've tried to have a go into one or two of the cups, haven't we, as well? And so, you know, the number of games is unrelenting. You've got that big break in the middle of 6 weeks or 5 weeks or whatever it was by the time we got back against Burnley. And you know, I don't know whose idea it was to sign players who are injury prone when the schedule either side of the World Cup is just so severe.
We've said
again, it's hindsight, isn't it? Yeah. But Sam Allardyce used to say to me, I used to write his column for the News of the World, and he used to say to me, you're hard working pre-season, the players you sign in the summer, the sports science, the sports medicine, that comes into its own from January onwards. And in our case, this season, that logic proves absolutely correct because we've been found wanting in that regard. We've lost players. We had a good 2 month spell there where we just couldn't get any players back fit.
Yeah, I mean, I get it, but I don't necessarily go with the pool of, you know, this is where we are in relation to the pool of players we can attract, players that notoriously have got injury issues and stuff like that. Because I feel like there's other clubs that have the same. And don't, one reason why Luton are always up the top of the league is because every time I look at them, I swear that 11 is always the same or near on the same. Every week, they've got the same 11. Millwall are pretty much the same as well. Back five, I swear, has been the back five for about 3 years. So
Millwall.
Yeah, Millwall. Yeah,
solid unit. You know, we usually beat them, but over the course of the season, they always overtake us.
Yeah,
they always overtake us because they've got a strategy in place.
The thing is, we seem to be such a streaky kind of team, don't we? Like under Warburton, we had half a season where we thought, "Oh, we're going to get relegated." And then we got Steph in, we got Charlie, and the second half of the season we were unbelievable.
Yeah.
Then the next season starts.
Well, we were great for the whole of 2021.
Yeah, the first half of that second season, brilliant, and then the second half of the season we completely tailed off again. This season, first half of the season, brilliant, and that's what's kept us up. Is Mick Beale's performances and how we got the team playing at the start of the season is ultimately keeping us out of the relegation zone at the minute.
I bumped into Lee Hoos at Wimbledon last summer, the tennis. And he said that because Mick Beale had no discernible track record as a number one anywhere, they had to do diligence on him like they'd never done before on a manager. And they were absolutely convinced that they've got the right bloke. And it was working well. But the last thing you know they expected was that, I mean, QPR, when was last time QPR had a manager poached prior to him? Literally poached was, there were a couple of attempts on Holloway in his first spell. We didn't go, but I think he had to go back to Jim Smith. They weren't banking on that at all. And then it happened, and they just didn't have a contingency plan, did they? I mean, Critchley was apparently on the shortlist last summer, and he was someone told me he was the first choice. But
they were the rumours, weren't they? Before Beale, they were the rumours that he was coming in.
Yeah,
you know, before.
But you need to be a certain type of manager, certain type of personality to manage this club, because it's in the spotlight a bit more than average for a team at our level. And Critchley did not suit that persona at all. Beale was confident in himself. He may have had no discernible championship or frontline record, but you could tell he was confident in what he did. And it's the ones who talk as well as deliver a good game, like Holloway, like Warnock, like Jim Smith, like Joe Francis, who've done well down the years.
Yeah, we love him. Yeah. We love. Yeah, I think someone said that on Twitter. That we love a manager like that, don't we? We don't like the introvert.
Who... Yeah, well, I can see that. You know, it's about enjoyment. You want a manager who you want a gaffer who you know who's as excited as you are about your team.
Yeah, yeah. Ollie, a quick question around whatever happens in the next five games. What needs to change in the summer?
I think we need to start getting rid of the 25-year-olds that we're still playing in the under-23s, etc. for a start.
Frustrating.
You know,
I love how you said that first. It was on my list. It certainly wasn't first, but it's true.
I just think there are so many, you know, 24, 25-year-olds that are in the young side of it. You know, they're stopping these youngsters coming through. I think we need an overhaul in the summer, whether that's selling a lot of players, getting rid of them. We need to release players and we need to stop signing players on frees that are free because they're injury prone. You know, not if Jake, you know, I think Jake Clark-Salt has got all the quality in the world, but there's a reason he was free. You know, when he played at Coventry, when he had the time to be on the pitch, he was outstanding. He was free because he's injury prone all the time. You know, Tottenham players as well. Stop signing injury-prone Tottenham Academy players. And it doesn't help that the entire staff and training are all like Tottenham and Les Ferdinand's mates. And I'm not taking away from some of them because some of them do a great job, but I think we need to get the academy and that side of it sorted. And I know we've got the new training ground. Get that sorted. Bring in some players that want to prove themselves, get a bit of experience in, and get rid of Deadwood that doesn't want to be here and doesn't look like they want to be here. Sell our assets to an extent, not all of them, get a bit of money in and reinvest it. That is all we need to do, in my opinion, because at the moment we are, in terms of, you know, people say we want new owners, etc. We are arguably one of the most unattractive clubs if you take away London, because we don't bring through academy players. I'm going to stop because I'll go on for years, but that would be my basis, yeah.
You know the Clark Salt thing. I think there's a good point I read recently from a Coventry fan that, and again, I don't know how true this is, but they did offer him a contract for him to stay there. They wanted him to stay there, but the terms were so less than ours because of his injury worries. They had clauses in there and stuff that we didn't have.
Balogun couldn't stay fit at Rangers either. There was nothing wrong with his ability. I saw him play for Brighton for 3 or 4 years ago, and he was a Premier League centre back all day long. Yeah. But it's the injury problem. If you can't keep a player on the pitch, then they're as useful to the first team as you and I.
Exactly, exactly. Doug, what would you anything you would want to see in the summer?
Well, I'm worried we won't see a lot because I don't know where like this magic pot of money is that we're going to be able to completely revamp the squad is. Like, I can't see anyone offering us any big money for any of our players because of the how they perform this season. Like, we need an overhaul, but the owners are paying out $2 million a month to keep us afloat. Where's the money going to come from for a summer overhaul? I want Ainsworth or to get backed, whatever league we're in, but I don't know how much backing he's actually going to get. So are we going to be stuck in the free market yet again?
What about board level? Like, you know, for me, there's some big changes needed. Someone's got to, I mean, this is, it's on, it, like I said, every week, it defies the laws of averages. This run we're on, like, it's ridiculous, right? Where does the buck stop with this? Again, it's happened last season. It happens every season. We go on these mad 9, 10, 11 games. We have mad injuries. I just think recruitment, head of recruitment, head of, you know, medical, you know, whoever runs the medical team, signs the players. There's got to be some sort of consequence for this season, whatever happens in my book. Aidan, I don't know if you agree.
Well, look, Tony Fernandez has been sitting at the ground for a long time. You know, gone are the days when, in my early days of Sky, you couldn't get him off telly. You know, you couldn't get him off Twitter. It was obvious he doesn't really know much about football. I interviewed him a few times and he came across a bluffer, to be perfectly honest with you. You know, yeah, he was involved trying to take over West Ham 2 years before he got involved with QPR. And somebody he was involved in that bid told me that, you know, his knowledge of football was very limited. You could tell that in his first few years at QPR. Now, there's only one thing worse than being on the plot and messing things up, and that's being an absent owner. Absent owners don't often work, you know? I look at Millwall, John Berylson, their chairman, yeah, he lives in the States, but he's over here a lot, and he's in touch with the club every single day. There's a reason why QPR have so many heads of departments, and that's because Fernandez has put in place a structure to run the club in his absence. He's not hands-on. And my dad always said to me, you know, if you're going to go into business, you've got to, A, know what you're talking about, which Fernandez doesn't, and B, you've got to be on the plot, because if you're someone else is spending your money, then they're not going to be accountable. If they are accountable, they usually lose their jobs and go on somewhere else. So I like Lee Hoos. I like him a lot. But, you know, he's been at five clubs, so I would fancy that even if he failed at QPR and it was decided that his time was up in the summer, he'd probably go to another club and pick up from there, maybe probably even do a good job. So there's lots of departmental heads. We need an owner who's more invested, not just financially, but also in terms of, you know, his time and his emotion, if you like. I was never convinced by Fernandez from the very beginning, although no one can say he didn't put his money where his mouth was. Someone contacted me about 3-4 months ago saying, is QPR for sale? I didn't discover who it was, but there is interest. Because of where we are, we will always attract interest.
Always. I don't believe anyone that says otherwise.
I was told at the club that they'd be surprised if anyone was interested because of the financial situation. But I'll tell you what's good. The training ground is a step forward. I mean, after 9 years of trying to win a crowdfunding debate with a group of people who want to keep us away from the Warren Farm, they finally got one built. My next question would be, having built that, do we actually need an academy? Because we're not producing players. If you look at the players over the last 5-6 years who've come into the first team, Ilias Cher signed from Liège in Belgium via Club Brugge, Abir Eze signed from, released by Millwall via some jobs outside of football, Bright Osso Samuel from Blackpool's reserves, Josh Bowler, I think came from Aldershot. The most success that we've had has come from players who've been pinched here and there from other academies, even if they're not Premier League academies. Brentford have now, the Premier League rules have dictated they have to open an academy, which is difficult, which is going to be even more difficult for us, because that means that, you know, there aren't many clubs in the champion in the EFL who've got two Premier League academies nearby, and they're going to be fighting against a third from 2024. So it's going to be very, very difficult attracting players, and that's just in West London, never mind the rest of London, and within an hour of the M25. So right. I'm wondering, do we just stick to the B team that we've just created and get rid of the academy altogether? I think as a community club, it would be a bit discomforting to have to do that, because it means jobs will be lost. But an academy in the top two divisions costs about £2 million a year to run. And I think there needs to be a debate over that, whether that continues or not. If we were getting a player out of it every 2 years or something, I could understand it. But I would say even the players who came through to the first team from the academy in the last 3 or 4 years are at best borderline championship players.
We seem to be harvesting players for clubs to come along and pinch them. I guess that's what's happening, isn't it?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's,
even
that's
people that are in there. That are
that's, what each of people, that's what each of people's, the elite performance player plan was set up for us to be. Because as with most manoeuvres within football in the last 30 years, it's designed to protect the big clubs. So under the current system, I was told maybe 3 years ago, I think it was, someone told me that instead of getting £11 million for Raheem Sterling, a player who never kicked a ball for us, under the current system, I think we would have got about 60 grand. So why not? You know, Brentford got rid of theirs, and it was one of the best things they ever did. They got rid of theirs in 2016. And it meant that, so Chris Meppen was a QPR fan. QPR family was in Chelsea's academy. They had a lot of top quality players, so he didn't quite make the cut. He went to Slough Town. Brentford watched his progress. They saw how he competed for half a season. And they brought him to Brentford, and within 18 months sold him for £12 million. That's business. That's the kind of business we need to be doing, and we don't do enough of. We did it with Abir Eze, but he was the exception rather than the rule. Brentford have done it time and time again.
And we need that, don't we? And what we need is someone. What we need is to have that conveyor belt, right, where we have a few of these players. We sell them for 15, 20 million, 10.
That's how you get strong. That's how you get
strong.
And then
you've got someone there ready to come in. They know they're going to sign where they're there. They're ready, waiting. They come in. And then that's how the sort of Brighton in the Premier League, Brentford, that's how they run. Just quickly, I just wanted to touch on, before we finish, on Tyler Roberts, Ollie. I've seen he's linked to, what is it? 500k, is that right? Is that what was rumoured to be?
Yeah, so is it Yorkshire Evening News and Leeds United News have been told that he's likely to join QPR on a permanent deal at the end of the season. The rumour is that it was 4.5 million if we went up, but there is an option for 500k if we stay, if we don't go up, but we stay in the league. If we go down, there's nothing. So, you know, I think I'm going to be sort of be get contradictive with myself here saying about signing injury prone players, but I'd sign him. You know, I have no issue with that. I think there's a player there. You know, I mean, when us boys spoke to Mick Beale, you know, he was, you know, at the Kitterfield, he was really, really impressed with him, and he really likes him. He said he's got all the talent. Give him a season, see what he does. Give him a summer, let him get fit, see what he can do for that kind of money. It's worth a punt, I think. To contradict myself, yeah, he's injury prone, but he's still only what, 24. Worth a go, I think.
If you add in Taylor Richards, who we've already signed, we're looking at what, £1 million? It leapt 750 between them. Two injury prone players. Is that, I do get what you mean. Is there's talent there, isn't there? You're risking it. It's a gamble. There's someone there who could keep him fit and get going. He probably would score 10, 15 goals in this league.
I'm not sure if Taylor Richards is. It's a bit hard with him, isn't it? Because it's almost like he's. You don't know if he's injured, because there's times where he's told everyone that he's not injured. He's just out of the squad, and then he's back in it. He's not getting game time. A lot of people wonder whether that's because he has to play a certain amount of games to not sign him.
He's already signed, hasn't he? I think Critchley said
in his assuming so, but yeah.
He had some personal stuff going on as well, didn't he, at one point?
Yeah.
The club said. And I think like the whole Roberts thing, like you said, I agree with what you say in the fact that for 500k, I don't think quality like and technical ability wise, you would get many other players of his standard. But it's that injury record, and can we keep him fit for 25 games minimum? That's the big issue.
Could we get someone lower league for 500k who could come in a striker somewhere? I don't know how much that Notts County striker would score. He scored like 40 goals this season. I was watching him the other day. He looks decent. Goal scorer, isn't it?
Yeah, but are they going to let him go for 500k?
I don't know. No,
they're going to want at least.
We don't know what division we're going to be in next season.
That's
the issue. I mean, let's get the next five games out of the way. We've got a real battle on our hands.
So, the dreaded question, lads: If we had to put money on now, do we think we're going to be okay? Do we think other teams are going to save us? Which is what I'm thinking. I think that possibly Reading and Cardiff, especially Reading, are particularly poor, that they're probably going to keep us up more than we keep ourselves up. But I guess we're still going to need some points from somewhere to do that.
I mean, Bristol City have won the last four games at QPR. We tend to do well down there. Norwich, the side that we've had trouble with again. They've got a parachute budget as well. And this is a time of the season where they're the sort of team that could squeeze into the playoffs under Wagner. And Stoke have lost one in seven, I think it is at the moment. We don't play them until a little bit later. But Burnley, who knows? Look, Burnley may take the foot off the gas. You might get a point. You never know.
And we've got another away game. Hope they win the league by then. Hope they win the league by the time we.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And then we've got another away game, haven't we?
Stoke.
That's Stoke away, of course it is. Yeah, yeah. So it's the remaining games: Coventry at home, Norwich at home, Bristol City at home, Stoke away. And
Burnley away.
Burnley away, as we mentioned.
Does it matter who we're playing, though? I mean, we've played the bottom three and lost convincingly.
Yeah, I know. I think
if we stay down, it might be very much to do with the Reading minus 6 points. I think that might be the reason why we stayed up. You know, that's kind of done us nicely because they're below us now. But also, I think you look at Reading's run, they've got, you know, next three games of Burnley, Luton and Coventry. Can you see him getting points out of that? Probably not. But they've also got a new gaffer, so they might have a new manager bounce. I hope they don't. I think we'll scrape it by the absolute skin of our teeth if we stay up. Just about stay up. Absolute skin of our teeth.
Doug, what do you think of me?
I was about to say the same as Ollie. I think like the Reading, like the points deduction is what's probably going to save us. I am worried about then getting a new manager bounce, because like every other club seems to get that apart from us. So you can see Reading picking up points in the next couple of games just for that pure reason. I don't know. I think we'll get over the line just about. I think we'll pick up another win somewhere along the lines. Don't ask which game I think we're going to win. I think we'll get a win somewhere and I think we'll just stay up.
Boys, you'd be amazed what a little bit of confidence can do, and we definitely showed that on Monday.
I was just going to say that 2-2 at West Brom, 2-0 down, might, in my mind, do more than the Watford 1-0, possibly. I don't know, get them going a bit more.
It's away from home as well. I'm just clinging to that because I've not seen anything like that in quite a while. They reminded me a bit more of the team that we saw earlier in the season.
Absolutely. Yeah. Cool. Okay. Just a quick couple of shout outs. We've got Tiger Feet, haven't we, coming on this weekend, and Aidan's kindly donating a real. I want it myself, actually. I'm trying to scrape together some money to see if I can put a bid in, Aidan. Did you want to talk about it?
Yeah, so it's a spare. It's a spare that I had. So I've got a main one on the wall, which I'll, for the benefit of you guys here, I'll show you what I've got on the wall. I'll take you through, and you'll see it's. I'll just bring you in here. So if you look on the wall here, you can see it in the background. So you can see the one that's actually on the wall.
Oh, lovely. Yeah.
And then you've got the spare down there. So I've got some damage to that one done last summer, and I was sent a replacement for free. That's the replacement, but it was a centimetre too short all the way around. And then I sent another replacement, which eventually went into the frame we can see up on the wall. So that one there is a spare. And, you know, I need it out of the property just because it's been hanging around. And I just thought I'd coincide it with Tiger Cubs, Tiger Feet 13 rather, and try. And I've had I put a reserve price of £75 on it, and I'll pay for UK postage myself. And I've had a bid of £250 this afternoon on Twitter. So if you'll be able to see it in the programme this weekend as well in the column. So, you know, anyone who's interested in it, if they've got any doubts about posting or anything, then I'll hire a van and I'll drive it over there myself. It's not a problem. But it's I haven't got any use for it because I've already got one on my wall. But I don't want it to waste. I want it to go to a Kukar fan. It's Gary Bannister on the left, Rory Wegley in the middle, and Les Ferdinand on the right. They're my three favourite strikers at QPR down the years.
Top man, great. If anyone's interested, drop Aidan a message.
DM on Twitter or you can get hold of him somehow. Sure.
Nice, mate. Nice. And we've also got a shout out for Hannah, who's just going to engage to a pod friend. Wayne Faraday, so congratulations. She's messaged us asking for a shout out. So congratulations, lads. Before we leave,
really?
A quick prediction on Coventry. What do we think?
2-1 ours.
3-1.
2-1.
I'll take a draw at the moment. I'm going to go 1-1. I think I've got a feeling Coventry might get a late equaliser, but you know what? It might. It wouldn't be the worst. That would be the worst result for us.
So,
a good team.
The thing that worries me the most is the officiating team from the Spurs Brighton game
been
demoted, and they're taking charge of it. So
insulting, isn't it?
Wait for a couple of dodgy penalties or something, or some dodgy offsides.
without VAR, it means they're going to have to make decisions themselves.
Well, that's it. Yeah. But no, I was going to say the same as Aidan. I felt like it's going to be like a 1-1. I think we'll get another point and another performance to build on.
Yeah.
Try and be positive.
We've also got Keith Stroud, haven't we, on Wednesday, the Norwich game. Tuesday, Wednesday. Oh, God. It's like they just sent him to Loftus Road, didn't it?
I know. All right,
lads. Thanks for coming on.
Good to meet you all.
Aidan, come on again soon, mate. Ollie,
absolutely, yeah. Give us a shout. It's done me good. I needed to do something different after not being very well, so I've really enjoyed it. So thanks for that, guys.
No, cheers for coming on, man.
Save for a good result. Yours.
Yours.
See you soon.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Confidence starts with loving who you are. And when your skin feels nourished and glows on the outside, you naturally radiate confidence from the inside. Give your skin a glow up with Osea's clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This ultra-hydrating body care features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. These seaweed-powered heroes use skincare-level ingredients normally reserved for your face for results you can see and confidence you can feel. Osea has been making clean, clinically proven seaweed-infused face and body care products for over 28 years. This luxurious skincare is vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.